Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and thank you all for coming. This is the RTC Weekly Download, the place to hear old-time radio. We're specializing this couple of weeks in Christmas shows because, obviously, Christmas is right around the corner. Don't have to remind you, you're going to be back in that store pretty soon, or these days maybe online. But we're going back in radio days, so it's definitely the store. On today's program, we're going to have an episode of the Family Theater Substitute Santa. And then in a little while, we'll be hearing from the Jurgens Journal with Walter Winchell.
The Mutual Broadcasting System, in cooperation with Family Theater Incorporated, presents Substitute Santa, starring Frank McHugh and James Burke. Ray Milland is your host.
More things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. Our happiness so often comes from little things, the simple deeds, the daily thoughtful acts of kindness, the words of encouragement we can and should give to one another. These things mean so much, especially at home, where appreciation and gratitude may often be forgotten because, well, because it is home, and we just take for granted the kindness and encouragement that is given. It's sad to see a home where words of thanks are forgotten, or where there's distrust and constant quarreling, because home was meant to be the happiest place in the world. And it can be with God's help. And in a home where there is the daily practice of family prayer, the daily expression of thanks to God, there is always a new appreciation of members of a family for one another, a new spirit of thankfulness and happiness.
We will hear from Ray Milland later in the program. Now, Family Theater presents Substitute Santa, starring Frank McHugh with James Burke.
Featherstone's department store.
Yes, madam. All complaints on purchases made must be made in person.
Sorry. Featherstone's department store.
Yes, we deliver in your suburb, right up to Christmas Eve.
You're welcome.
Featherstone's department store.
Yes, sir. That's right. The 1 millionth person entering our toyland will receive as a Christmas present any article on sale in our store.
Yes. Yes, sir. A mink coat, a diamond ring, anything.
Well, most any day now.
You're welcome.
Featherstone's department...
Oh, Mr. Featherstone?
Yes.
Mr. Potter, to your office immediately?
Yes, sir. I'll start paging him right now.
You're welcome.
Mr. Archibald Potter, report to Mr. Featherstone's office.
Now what does old Featherstone want? Grigsby, if they ever want you to be the manager of this store, walk. Do not run to the nearest exit.
Don't worry, Mr. Potter. I'm not after your job. I have trouble enough right here in the toy department.
You have troubles? Oh, I'll match troubles with you any day, Grigsby.
Oh, Mr. Grigsby. Mr. Grigsby.
Yes, Miss Lee?
Santa Claus is ill.
He's what?
He's indisposed. He's not feeling well. Santa Claus has a tummy ache.
Oh, no. No. He can't do this to me.
Mr. Archibald Potter, report to Mr. Featherstone's office right away.
There's Featherstone again.
Mr. Potter, if Santa Claus...
Grigsby, that's one of your troubles. I have troubles of my own. Chin up. Carry on.
Mr. Potter, report immediately to Mr. Featherstone's office in person.
I'm coming, F.W. I'm coming. If nothing else happens, I'll... I'm sorry. I'm awfully sorry. I beg your pardon. Did I hurt you?
No. I'm all right, really.
Well, that's my fault. It really is. I should have watched where I was going.
I wasn't watching either.
Wait. I'll pick up your packages. I hope I didn't break anything.
No. There's nothing fragile in any of them. Just a few trinkets. Some of the things that we don't have in England.
Oh, you're from England. Here, I think that's all your package.
Thank you.
Well, you're from England. Well, what do you know? Well, we import a great many things from your country. I'm Archie Potter. I'm the manager of Featherstone.
Oh, how interesting.
So, you see, I shouldn't go around bumping into people. You said that your name was,
Mr. Potter, please report immediately to Mr. Featherstone's office. Please!
Oh, there it goes again. All right. Oh, look. You're coming into the store again, aren't you?
Yes. I'll be here every day until I find what I'm looking for.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I'll be seeing you then. Well, I've got to run now. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Potter. Goodbye.
She's beautiful. She's lovely. She's gorgeous. She's exquisite.
Who's that?
Archie Potter.
Come in.
Oh, yes, sir. Did you want to see me, Mr. Featherstone?
Yes, for the last half hour.
Well, I've been having a little trouble downstairs.
You're having trouble. Come up and match troubles with me sometime. Look here, Potter. You're the one who talked me into giving a Christmas present to the millionth visitor to Toyland.
Yes, F.W. I'm proud to say that was my idea.
Well, I've been thinking it over and I don't like it.
But, F.W., you okayed it.
I know I did, but it's going to cost us too much money. His choice of anything in the store. What's the most expensive article we sell?
Let me see. Probably that mink coat in the fur department. It sells for an even
$4,000. $4,000? Suppose the lucky person is a woman. Suppose she picks that mink coat.
Then we'll give it to her.
We'll give it to her, just like that.
Look, F.W., we've already got more than $4,000 worth of advertising out of this. Newspapers all over the country have played it up. And all the newspapers in town will send reporters and cameramen to cover it.
That's all well and good, but just the
and
same...
And we've sold more than $4,000 worth of merchandise on account of it. In the toy department alone, our sales are up at least $30,000.
Well, that's encouraging. But I still hope she doesn't pick the mink coat.
F.W., haven't you any Christmas spirit?
Why should I? Nobody ever gave me anything. I've worked hard for every penny I've made. I've never found a Santa Claus to...
Oh, speaking of Santa Claus, that reminds me. May I use your telephone?
Go ahead.
Miss Carter, this is Potter speaking. Will you connect me with the toy department? Thank you.
What's the matter now?
Santa Claus isn't feeling well.
He hasn't got anything on the way I feel.
Oh, hello. This is Potter. May I speak to Mr. Grigsby? Oh, hello. Hello, Grigsby. He is? Is that so? Oh, yes, do that. I'll be down in just a few minutes.
What's wrong?
Santa Claus, just taken to the hospital. It looks like appendicitis.
Well, that's a fine thing. Now what are we going to do?
Oh, it's already been done, F.W. Grigsby, that nice-looking young chap in the toy department, he's offered a substitute for Santa. He's putting on Santa's outfit now.
Grigsby, eh? Will he want anything extra for it?
Well, it wouldn't hurt to give him a little extra.
Look here, Potter, you're mighty free with other people's money.
Well, I better go down and help Grigsby. Oh, that seventh floor is a madhouse. Everything's been happening down here today.
Why doesn't something good ever happen here?
Well, it does. Just this morning, I bumped into... Oh, F.W., she's gorgeous. She is the most beautiful...
What are you talking about?
She makes you think of white rose petals on black velvet. And she walks like a spring breeze in a field of daffodils.
Who?
Well, the young lady I bumped into. And as dainty as a Dresden china doll.
I hope you didn't break her.
Oh, no, I didn't. I just came around a corner, and there she was. And then she came around a corner, and there I was. And we sort of collided. F.W., do you believe in love at first sight?
Potter, stop making daisy chains out of my paper clips.
Oh, I'm sorry. And she's about 5'2".
Eyes of blue.
No, they're more like an amethyst.
And she walks like a spring breeze in a field of daffodils.
Oh, then you've seen her.
No, I haven't seen her. I'm quoting you. Potter, Just how does a spring breeze walk in a field of daffodils? Go ahead, show me.
Well?
Oh, she knocks over ashtrays too, eh?
I'm sorry, I didn't see it.
You'd better get out of here. Your spring breeze is too much like a tornado.
All right, F.W. I'll be back later. She does walk like a spring
breeze. Get out of here!
I see you're doubling in whiskers.
Yes, Miss Potter. Somebody had to take Santa Claus's place, and I like kids, so I volunteered.
Good for you. But can you laugh like Santa Claus? You know, Santa has a deep, hearty laugh. Can you give us that?
I don't know. I have a lot of worries on my mind, but I'll try. How's this? Ho, 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 ho.
Oh, Grigsby, you can do better than that. Look, for a good hearty laugh, I'll get you an extra $50.
Well, that's different.
Oh, good. You got it. Now you go out there and climb into Santa's sleigh and go to town.
Yes, sir.
Attaboy, Santa, attaboy. Well, that's settled. I wonder if I'll see her again today. She said she'd be coming back.
Oh, look, Jackie, here's Mr. Potter. Good afternoon, Mr. Potter, sir.
Well, Mrs. Jones and Jackie, too. Hi, Jackie.
Say hello to Mr. Potter.
Well, Mr. Potter.
Mr. Potter's the manager of this store.
Oh, he works here, too, huh?
Yes, Jackie. I work here just like your mother does. She cleans at night with a mop and a scrubbing brush, and I spend the day trying to keep it clean. Confidentially, hers is a better job.
I think so, too.
Jackie! Mr. Potter, I brought Jackie down to see Santa Claus.
Oh, yes? Well, Jackie, there he is, way over there at the other end of Toyland.
Oh, yeah. I see him now. He doesn't look as fat as he did last year.
Well, Santa has worried a lot lately. Some of his little girls and boys haven't been so good.
Oh, I've been a good boy.
Yes, Jackie's been a very good boy, Mr. Potter. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if he were the millionth person to enter Toyland?
It certainly would. Jackie, if you could have anything you wanted in the whole store, what would you pick?
A cowboy suit.
Well, for F.W.'s sake, let's hope you're the one.
By the way, Mr. Potter, what's happened to the window display we always have at Christmas time?
Which one, Mrs. Jones?
The one that shows the Christ child in the manger, and the bright star and the wise men.
Oh, you mean the nativity scene?
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't we have that one this year?
No, we don't, sir.
Well, now that you mention it, I don't remember seeing it. Why, that window is traditional at Featherstone's. Oh, the window trimmers will hear about this.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't have mentioned it.
I'm glad you did, Mrs. Jones. I'll have that window set up tonight.
Oh, that'll be fine. It's such a beautiful scene.
Hey, Mom, come on.
Oh, all right, Jackie. He's getting impatient, so I guess I'd better go.
I'll see you tonight, Mrs. Jones. You too, Jackie. Let's see her. She might be down on the fourth floor in the dress department. They don't have dresses like that in England. Yes. I think I'll get down there. Oh, there he goes again. All right, F.W. A head as light as a feather and a heart as hard as a stone. That's Featherstone.
Well?
Everything's under control, F.W. Grigsby makes a fine substitute, Santa. He's laughing his head off.
What's he so happy about?
I promised him an extra $50.
Oh, stop giving away my money.
Grigsby deserves it, F.W.
Well, maybe he is helping business. Oh, all right, give it to him. That reminds me. When will the millionth person enter Toyland?
Well, at the rate they're coming in, it ought to happen about noon tomorrow. We'd like to have you there, F.W.
I'll be there. I want to kiss that $4,000 mink coat goodbye. Of course, not many people know that we have a $4,000 mink coat here, do they?
Oh, yes. It's in the front window.
What?
Yes. It's been there all week.
Oh, why did I ever own a department store?
And speaking of windows, do you know that somebody forgot to set up our nativity window? You know, window number 12.
I hate to pull out that merchandise display for something that doesn't bring us any business. After all, it's Christmas.
Listen, F.W., That star-spangled Christmas tree you have in the main lobby, that's not Christmas. Even the seventh-floor Toyland with Santa Claus, that's not Christmas. But that little scene in Bethlehem, that's Christmas. The real Christmas.
Potter, there isn't a window trimmer at this late date to
start. I'll fix it myself tonight, and all by myself if I have to.
Someday you're going to turn the wrong corner. Potter, have you seen your spring breeze blowing around anymore?
No, I haven't, F.W., but I'm hoping. Oh, she has a voice like music in the moonlight. And her eyes, they're so deep, you could fall right in and drown.
Potter, don't let this infatuation run away with you. Remember, your first love is Featherstone's department store.
F.W., I have enough troubles without reminding me of that.
Oh, Mr. Potter, that window's gonna be beautiful. I didn't know you could trim windows, too.
Well, Mrs. Jones, to tell you the truth, I didn't know I could either. But the subject, like the nativity, you know, it's inspiration.
Oh, it's just like a beautiful picture. The manger and the little Christ child and the bright star.
I wonder if Jackie succeeded in finding some straw. Then we'll be finished.
Mr. Potter, don't you think that Mary, the mother, should be closer to the manger, sort of bending over like?
Well, Mrs. Jones, you're right. I'll fix that.
Here's the straw, Mr. Potter. I found some in a box.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. That's just the right kind of straw. Mrs. Jones, I'm afraid we're making a mess for you to clean up.
Oh, my land, Mr. Potter. That's what I'm here for. See, Jackie, he's putting the straw in the manger around the little Christ child.
Yes, Jackie. This shows you what happened many, many years ago in a little town called Bethlehem.
Was he a real baby?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, Jackie. This is one Christmas story that's real and true.
That's what I was talking to Jackie about this afternoon, Mr. Potter.
Yes, Christmas is the birthday of the infant Jesus.
That's the real meaning of Christmas, Jackie. Mrs. Jones, you're a very devout person.
And why shouldn't I be? I'm on my knees the whole night through. And I try to pray just as sincerely with a scrubbing brush in my hand as I do with my prayer book.
Mr. Porter, when I brought this drawing, I noticed something. There's a man in one of the show windows.
A man? Well, we don't have any window trimmers working tonight.
Well, there's a man in one of them.
Which one?
That big window down there.
Why, that's where the furs are. Why, there's a 4,000... You wait here, Jackie. I'm going to go and take a look.
And I'll go with you, sir. And I'll take my mop along just in case.
Yes, yes, all right. Come on. But everybody, now, be careful. I cannot imagine how a man got in... Unless he hid in the store.
Maybe that's what he did. We'll soon find out.
Shh. This is the window. Yes. The door into the window was open.
Now you chase him out, and I'll swat him with the mop.
All right. Get ready. What's going on in here?
Oh, hello, Potter.
Why, hello, Mr. Featherstone. It's you.
Well, who did you expect? Miss Hush?
It's all right, Miss Jones. It's the old man. It's Mr. Featherstone himself.
No, sure. And I was all ready to knock somebody for a home run.
F.W., what are you doing in the fur window?
I was looking at this $4,000 mink. Is that it?
That's it.
It doesn't look so wonderful. Why, here's one for $325 that looks so much like it you can hardly tell the difference.
Well, the cheaper one is a copy of it. An imitation mink. It's a good imitation. And it's a good coat. But it's not the real thing.
I see. Well, you don't have to put a spotlight on this $4,000 one. It's too conspicuous. That's the first thing somebody's going to think of when he has choice of anything in the store.
Well, we're trying to sell the coat before that happens, F.W. That's the only $4,000 coat we have. If we can sell it, then we won't have to give it away.
I never thought of that. Put two spotlights on it.
Okay, F.W.
Say, Mom, is that old man Featherstone?
Hush, Jackie. Yes, this is the man who owns the store.
Who's this?
This is Mrs. Jones, of the cleaning department.
And this is my boy, Jackie.
My mother says you're a fine man.
Well, she does, eh?
She says you give a lot of work to a lot of people.
Yes, I guess I do.
But she says you're a lonely old codger, too.
Jackie! Never mind him, Mr. Featherstone.
The boy is right, Mrs. Jones. I am a lonely old codger.
Mom, why don't we invite Mr. Featherstone over to our house for Christmas dinner?
Oh, no, Jackie. Mr. Featherstone already has a place to eat Christmas dinner.
Yes, of course. I always eat Christmas dinner at my club. But thank you, just the same.
Come on, Jackie. We mustn't bother Mr. Featherstone. And besides that, I've got the main lobby to scrub.
Bye, Mr. Featherstone.
Goodbye, Jackie. Mrs. Jones. Christmas dinner, eh? Do you suppose the boy meant it?
I'm sure he meant it.
They'd enjoy having me?
Why, certainly they would. They're real people. You're not a millionaire to them. You're just
a lonely old codger. Well, Potter, you might as well get back to your Christmas window. I saw it from outside. It's mighty nice.
Wow. Well, thanks. All right, F.W., I'll go back and finish it.
Do that. A $4,000 mink coat and a $325 coat that looks just like it. Now, if somebody accidentally switched the price tags on those two coats just for one day, who would know the difference? Then, if somebody picks the $4,000 one, it would only cost us $325. Why not? Oh, Featherstone, that's what's wrong with you. You're always thinking about money. That's why you're a lonely old codger.
Kindly step back, folks. Let the people get into Toyland. Don't crowd, please. Don't crowd. Remember, there are children here.
Potter, are we getting near the fence?
Oh, there you are, F.W. I was afraid you'd miss it.
One at a time, please. Go through the turnstile into single file.
Yes, we're counting the last 100. It'll happen any minute now.
Good. I'll be glad to get it over with.
Oh, yes, yes. It's been great, F.W. Oh, look. Look, there she is.
Who? What are you talking
about? That's her. That's her. That's the girl who,
Oh, you mean the spring breeze. Say, she's all right.
F.W., she's getting in line. She's coming in a toy lamb. Oh, if she could only be the 1 millionth person.
Potter, that sort of thing only happens in books.
Well, she's 1 in 1 million, of course. If she could only be the one in this million. Miss Hunter, what's the count? 75, 76, 77, 70. It could be 99, 80. She's getting closer. 81, 82.
83, she'll never make it. 84, 85.
86, it's going to be close. 7, 88. She's 89.
90, 91. You know how to pick them. 92, 93. She's not bad. 94. 95,
oh, I'm afraid. Look at the 96 and 7. I'll never be the same again. 98, 99. 1 million! She made it! Yeah. Ma'am, you are it.
I don't understand. What's all this about?
Well, haven't you read her advertisements? You're the 1 millionth person entering our toyland.
Oh, dear.
And now I can find out your name.
I'm Margaret Allen.
Mrs. or Miss,
oh,
I hope. That's wonderful. And you're from...
From Liverpool.
That's marvelous. Ladies and gentlemen, I have the happy pleasure to announce that the 1 millionth person entering Toyland is Miss Margaret Allen of Liverpool, England. Cameraman from the paper to hear this, Allen. Will you pose for a picture, please?
Yes. I'm so bewildered by all this sudden attention. I really...
Hold on, Potter. I want you in this picture, too. After all, I'm only the owner of the stall.
Oh, yes. Excuse me, Miss Allen. This is F.W. Featherstone himself.
Very pleased to meet you, Mr. Featherstone.
How do you do, young lady? Now, you fellows with the cameras, be sure you get all three of us in.
Hold it. There. Thanks, fellas. Thanks.
Now, young lady, what do you want for Christmas?
I don't understand.
Well, it's like this, Miss Allen. For being the 1 millionth person to enter Toyland, you get your choice of any article on sale in the store.
Oh, goodness, you mean any article I want?
Yes, anything from a stick of gum to a $4,000 mink coat.
Yes, anything you want.
I know what I want. I don't know whether I'll ever be able to use it, but this is what I want. A wedding gown.
A wedding gown?
You shall have the best wedding gown in the store. Better than that, I'll include a complete wedding trousseau.
Oh, Mr. Featherstone, I don't know how to thank you.
Well, wait, what I would like to know is, who was the lucky man?
Well,
I don't know.
You don't know?
You see, in England during the war, I met an American soldier. I fell in love with him. We planned to be married on Christmas Day, but he was called away from England.
Oh, that was a tough break.
And while he was gone, my home in Liverpool was struck by a bomb. Oh, I spent months and months in the hospital, and when I got out, I was well physically, but I couldn't remember anything.
Amnesia.
Well, that's what they called it. I couldn't even remember the name of my sweetheart. I'm sure if I see him, I'll know him and he'll all come back.
But how did you happen to come in here to Featherstone?
Well, I found a letter in my belongings. It was just signed Joe, but I'm sure it was from him. And he said in his letter that when the war was over, he'd go back to his old job at Featherstone.
We have a lot of returned soldiers here. Half of them are named Joe. Well,
I started coming here yesterday. I intended to go to every department of the store and see if I could find him.
Well, if he's in the store, we'll find him for you.
Miss Allen, I'm from the Daily Gazette. Would you mind posing with Santa Claus while we take a picture?
That's a good idea. You know, Potter, giving this Christmas present and making this young lady so happy has made me feel good, too.
That's the fun you've been missing, F.W. Come on, Miss Allen. Santa Claus over here.
And what do you want, little man?
Here you are. Here's Santa Claus, Miss Allen. Climb right into the sleigh with him. Come on, F.W., you get in, too. You've been kind of a Santa Claus to her.
Margaret. It's Margaret. Margaret Allen.
Bixby, do you know this girl?
Know her? I hunted all over England for her.
Joe Grigsby, it's you! Oh, Joe!
Margaret!
Why, Potter, I thought you...
Oh, my dream girl. And what happens? She marries Santa Claus. And a substitute Santa at that.
Substitute Santa starred Frank McHugh as Mr. Potter with James Burke as Mr. Featherstone. Now, here is your family theater host for tonight, Ray Milan.
This is the age of invention, the day of scientific discovery. There are discoveries in atomic power and supersonics. There are inventions for super planes, super bridges, super buildings, and millions of other inventions that find their way to farms, factories, and homes. No one questions the progress made in things scientific and intellectual. But what about the simple art of living together? And the simplest art, because it's so fundamental, the art of living together as a family. In a land of freedom, each man's home is his castle. A home isn't only built of stone or bricks or walls or roof. It's built with the spirit of a boy and girl who pledge their unchanging love in the sacred bond of marriage. And where there's God's blessing in the daily practice of family prayer and a home, it is in truth an unchanging love. Because the family that prays together stays together. Before saying goodnight, I'd like to thank Frank McHugh and James Burke for their performances this evening. Our thanks to Harry Lawrence for writing tonight's play and to Max Terr for his music. This production of Family Theater Incorporated was directed by David Young. Others who appeared in tonight's play were Una Mordashed, Margie List, Joe Graham, Bob Rockwell, Gwen Delano, Phil Bernard, and Bob Young. Next week, our Family Theater stars will be Johnny Johnston and Catherine Grayson in A Rose by Any Other Name. And your host will be Don Ameche. This is Ray Milan saying good night and God bless you.
This series of the Family Theater broadcast is made possible by the thousands of you who felt the need for this kind of program, by the Mutual Broadcasting System, which has responded to this need, and by a friend of the New York Foundling Hospital, which cares for homeless and motherless babies without distinction of race, creed, or color. Be with us next week at the same time when our Family Theater stars will be Johnny Johnston and Catherine Grayson, with Don Ameche as host. Tony Lafrano speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
And once again, from our home in England, the Queen and I send our Christmas greetings and good wishes to each one of you all the world over. Some of you may hear me on board your ships, in your aircraft, or as you wait for battle in the jungles of the Pacific Islands or on the Italian peaks. Some of you may listen to me as you rest from your work or as you lie sick or wounded in hospital. To many of you, my words will come as you sit in the quiet of your homes. But wherever you may be, today, of all days in the year, your thoughts will be in distant places and your hearts with those you love. I hope that my words, spoken to them and to you, may be the bond that joins us all in one company for a few moments on this Christmas day.
The Jurgens Journal, featuring Walter Winchell. Mr. Winchell, whose famous column appears in the New York Daily Mirror and other newspapers with more than 25 million readers, is brought to you by Jergens, the lotion for soft, smooth, romantic hands.
I can think of grand Christmas gifts for men, only they all cost so much.
No, they don't. For just $1 plus tax, you can give a man a grand big bottle of Jergens lotion.
Jergens lotion for a man?
Yes, indeed. While in service, lots of men learn to use Jergens lotion, and they still do. Before and after shaving, for a quick, comfortable shave. And for his hands, too. A well-groomed man doesn't want roughened, chapped hands. Plenty often, a man raids his wife's bottle of Jergens lotion. So give him his own. A small bottle, maybe, in the toe of his stocking, or be generous. Give him the big bottle in its bright Christmas wrapping. He'll be pleased and flattered that you gave him Jergens lotion for Christmas. Now to the editorial room of the Jurgens Journal and Walter Winchell.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South American. All the ships at sea, let's go to press. Flash. Washington. Three AFL unions have just agreed to call off their scheduled nationwide strike against Western Union. Portland, Oregon. Sam Jackson, the grandson of the founder of the Oregon Journal, was killed tonight in a helicopter owned by that newspaper. Washington. The United States has quietly arranged a loan of $300 million to Canada in an attempt to save the Canadian dollar from doing a ruble. New York. Herschel Johnson, our delegate to the United Nations, is not yet off the critical list at Lenox Hill Hospital, New York, but he is reported doing very well. New York City. Cesar Petrillo, the czar man of the Musicians Union, is now expected to pull every live musician out of radio by February. New York City. Patricia Miles, who lost a paternity case against Johnny Myers, has changed lawyers. Next stop, the appellate division. Wall Street. A merger, I hear, is in the making between the two biggest independent motor car companies, Packard and Nash. Recent secret attempts by Ford to buy out Packard failed. Hollywood. The funeral services for Mark Hellinger will be held on Wednesday next at 11 a.m. at Pierce Brothers, 5959 Hollywood Boulevard, Hollywood, California. Mark and his wife were seeing a new picture in their home last midnight when he was stricken. Gladys rushed him to the hospital. The end came at 2:15 this morning, California time. The Washington ticker. Federal authorities are amazed at the great number of criminal records that have popped up in the loyalty check of American government workers because someone never demanded fingerprints. Their names will eventually be made public. Following the pattern set by Adolf Hitler, Moscow money will be very conspicuous during the 1948 presidential campaign in an effort to defeat the Marshall Plan and Mr. Truman. The Justice Department. A new subversive list is being readied for publication by U.S. Attorney General Tom Clark. Some nationally known political organizations are on this list. The White House. As of tonight, right now, the President's planned message on the State of the Union to the January Congress will be arranged on the principles of FDR's New Deal, a sizzler. New York. The communist newspaper in New York is puckering up its lips for a great big kiss from labor leader John L. Lewis, a very gruesome picture. Intimate friends of John Lewis report that Mr. Lewis is far more ill than people realize. Washington. Some folks just returned from London report that Lord Lewis Mountbatten or Sir Oliver Franks may succeed Lord Inverchapel as British ambassador at Washington, and that the Anthony Edens divorce suit may involve the London correspondent of an American news magazine. Washington. Democratic headquarters are deeply concerned about Pennsylvania and New York. Attention, Mr. and Mrs. United States. Next Thursday, Christmas, is the birthday of a man who has answered many thousands of questions over many hundreds of years with a few simple answers. It is a great miracle to multiply 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish into food for 5,000. But it is a greater miracle to turn hate into love. A simple code of ethics doesn't operate by the slide rule. A square deal is measured by the spirit and not by mathematics. Blast furnaces can melt steel, but it still takes a heart to melt a heart. It is a miracle that Christ lived so long ago. It is an even greater miracle that he lives so much today. Cities may fall, machines may rust, and mountains crumble, but his great principles stand through the ages. And of all the great principles for which this man stood, the greatest are these. It is brave to be decent. It is courageous to be considerate. And it is strong to be kind. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Hellinger, with whom I covered the Texas Guinan beat in the early 1920s, is gone. At 44. He was my closest friend until the Hollywood and Broadway coasts separated us. By distance, you see. We had a pact in 1924. A way back in the good old Morris Plan days. When Mark would sign as my co-maker and I would sign as his. We promised each other then that whoever survived would write the best obit notice a guy could have written for him. Mark doesn't need any obit notice by me. His life story and the way he lived for the other fella would make it easy journalistically if it weren't so very difficult personally. The lines I just spoke about another man certainly fit Mark Hellinger. It is brave to be decent. It is courageous to be considerate. And it is strong to be kind. Mark was the concrete example of the phrase, great guy. He made an art of friendship. People who hardly knew him liked him. And those who knew him loved him. No man could have a better friend than Mark. And no man had more of them. Mark Hellinger went out in the style in which he lived and in the style in which he wrote. The O. Henry magic. It was a typical Hellinger script, too. A tug at the heart, a lump in the throat, and a sudden surprise ending. New York. In a very few moments, I will announce the name of the person who submitted the best and original definition of a communist. The prize, as you know, is a mink coat valued at $10,000. The Damon Runyon Cancer Committee thanks all of you in the 48 states for again enriching the Damon Runyon Fund by over $150,000 in $1 donations during this brief contest of skill. Thanks to the donor of the $10,000 mink coat, the Associated Fur Coat and Trimming Manufacturers, who incidentally were never consulted by me about the theme of the contest. Thanks also to the Reuben H. Donnelly Corporation, who handled everything for our committee. This very great Donnelly firm worked 20 hours a day. Thanks also to the anonymous mink coat maker who picked the straw from a hat which elected him as the maker of the coat. He will, as agreed long ago, receive no publicity. The mink coat will be made to order to the winner's measurements. It should be ready in about 3 weeks, they tell me. Stand by, please. I'll be back in a flash with the name of the winner of the $10,000 mink coat.
A young friend tells us...
This is our first married Christmas, and we're a long way from our families. But there's no gloom where my bill is. We're having 10 for Christmas dinner, and a gift for each. Gifts for 10. Could have stumped me, but Bill said, let's give them all Jergens lotion. Wasn't he smart? The girls will know Jergens lotion is the hand care the Hollywood stars use.
Oh, yes, girls know the stars use Jergens lotion 7 to 1 over any other hand care in the world.
And judging by my bill, men use plenty of Jergens lotion, too.
They do. It's a smart gift all around. For stocking stuffers or the main gift, 10 cents to $1 plus tax. The dollar bottle comes in a bright special holiday wrapper. They'll think you're a mind reader if you give this favorite Jergens lotion for Christmas. And now back to the editorial room of the Jergens Journal and Walter Winchell.
And now for some tips of the papers. INS. Harry Revel is suing Mutual Broadcasting Company for $250,000 tomorrow. Revel and Mack Gordon composed Did You Ever See a Dream Walking, Love Thy Neighbor, and many other great song hits. Revel alleges that he sent Mutual Broadcasting an idea for a new radio program, and that Mutual turned it down and then used it under another name. A dirty trick of true. St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I am saying in the New York Mirror tonight now on the stands that True Davis Jr. and Virginia Mutter, both of St. Joe, Missouri, will be married January 24th. New York Journal American. General Eisenhower's memoirs are 2/3 finished. The price is over $500,000 for newspaper, magazine, film, and radio rights. As a general, Eisenhower prefers an outright sale, as that would give him a capital gains. He'd pay only a 25% tax. Associated Press. Babies are now considered a luxury by the United States Tax Department. Most items for infants and drugstores, baby oil, cream, borated talcum, and bags for diapers now come under the 20% tax list. To the Miami Herald. A year ago last week, from the Roney Plaza Cabana Club, the Runyon Cancer Fund was launched. On the 29th of December, we will turn over another $100,000 for cancer research in Florida. $1 million, not a penny of which was ever deducted for expenses by our committee. Allocated in the United States in 1 year. United Press, Robert Ruoff's new satirical book, Grenadine Etching, has just been barred in Canada. And Canadians could use a good laugh, too. Ladies and gentlemen, Senator Vandenberg tells friends he positively will not run. Even Mr. President's closest friends are sickened at the manner General Eisenhower is being attacked for things he never said. Things, by the way, that some Republicans and Republican commentators keep putting into Eisenhower's mouth. Incidentally, foreign correspondent Cleet Roberts, just returned from Japan, reported to his papers over here that General MacArthur's closest friends doubt that MacArthur's physical condition is good enough to take on a presidential campaign. In sum, here is the situation. Wallace keeps his head in the clouds, Taft keeps his head in the sand, and Eisenhower just keeps his head. Washington, Senator Kenneth McKellar of Tennessee is again reported very ill. He is 78. Any more? Washington, one of the biggest scandals since Teapot Dome will be a proposed sale of synthetic rubber plants, one of our great strategic resources. The proposed sale, insiders tell me, would cripple national defense. Washington, Rocky Graziano, the champion, and some of his influential friends have been trying to get his complete dossier out of the U.S. Army files for what they say public view. The United States Army is doing Graziano a great big favor by refusing. New York, Donald Lamont, Margaret Rice, are betrothed. She is the granddaughter of the late president of General Electric. Attention, San Francisco Examiner. Please assign a reporter at once to Mrs. D. Block of El Monte, California. Her husband, a war veteran, sent in the best definition of a communist in the opinion of the Damon Runyon Cancer Committee. Mr. Block gets the Runyon Fund's $10,000 mink coat and in sunny California, of all places. Congratulations, Mr. Block. And a Merry Christmas to you, Mrs. B. And that, ladies and gentlemen, winds up another edition of the Jergens Journal until next Sunday night at the very same time. Until then, and with lotions of love, I remain your New York correspondent, Walter Winchell, who leaves you with Mr. Block's best definition of a communist. One who would like to divide everything, particularly these United States. Good night.
Have you gone way beyond your Christmas budget? Do you still have several last-minute gifts to buy? Here's Jergens' gift suggestion to you, and it's priced surprisingly low. The Jergens gift set, called Loveliness for You, costs only $1, and here's what it contains. Nestled in a lovely star-sprinkled package are four popular Jergens items. A box of Jergens powder, a jar of all-purpose face cream, a bottle of romantically scented cologne, and, of course, Jergens lotion for the hands. Yes, these four beauty items, all done up in a feminine package for Christmas gift-giving at a thrifty price, only $1. You'll find the Jergens gift set called Loveliness for You at all cosmetic counters. Next week, another edition of the Jergens Journal with Walter Winchell. And now be sure to remain tuned for Luella Parsons' 15-minute program featuring as guest Bing Crosby, which follows immediately. This is Ben Grauer speaking.
The Victory Front, presented by the United States government, brings you Second Husband. Columbia Broadcasting System, in cooperation with the United States government, has the pleasure of bringing its listeners a new series of programs, a different kind of series. During these programs, the people many of us know and love, people we meet every day on the radio, have volunteered their services to the government, and are going to visit here at the same time each weekday on the Victory Front. Now, speaking for the United States government, here is Carl Van Doren.
Second Husband is featured on this week's presentation of the Victory Front. Among the people known to millions of Americans, loved and admired by them, are those you meet every day in the story of Second Husband. Brenda Cummings and her friends have been doing all they can on the home front to help our boys on the fighting fronts. Faced with the same intimate problems you face every day, they understand that we cannot win the war or the peace unless we understand what we are fighting for, unless we understand that we must know and have faith in our allies, unless we understand that we must remain united to win. And now, Second Husband.
Second Husband. We bring you now the story of beautiful Brenda Cummings, who was a young widow with two children living in Montana until she married wealthy, distinguished Grant Cummings and went to New York, where their son was born, where Grant lost his fortune, and where Brenda became a famous actress. But now, Brenda's life and Grant's are profoundly changed by the war. On dimly lit Broadway, Brenda is starring in a successful New York play, and Grant is now Lieutenant Commander Cummings aboard a submarine somewhere in the dark waters of the Atlantic. As millions of others, these two who love each other are separated. Tonight, Brenda is in her theater dressing room, and with her is her loved old guardian, Ben Porter. It's Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, 1942. Brenda's lovely face is reflected in the mirror, but Ben is leaning toward her anxiously as she says,
Ben, 15 minutes before the curtain goes up, and it means so much to me to be at my best tonight.
Oh, Brenda, girl, I've never known you not to play your best.
Yes, but tonight is Christmas Eve, Ben. Christmas Eve. Oh, I'm not worthy of Grant if I can't be as brave as a wife should be when her husband is not with her for Christmas.
Honey, you're doing just fine.
Oh, no. No, I'm not, Ben. Grant's on a submarine. He's out on the cold, bitter, deadly Atlantic. Oh, but I gather courage, Ben, in knowing that other women, too, all over the world, are separated from the men they love tonight. And I've got to go through with tonight and tomorrow, Christmas Day, with the sort of faith and courage I imagine an English woman would show, or a Russian woman, And I know that we Americans can equal any of them.
Yeah, you bet we can, honey girl. Say, we Americans have got plenty of what it takes. We built this country the hard way. Now, don't forget that.
No, I'm not forgetting it, Ben. I'm not. Yes.
Mrs. Cummings, some flowers for you.
Oh, thank you, dearie.
It's all right, I'll get them.
All right, thank you, Ben, will you?
They arrived just this second.
Oh, well, that's fine, and thanks for bringing them, Jerry. Say, would you look at the size of this box, Brenda? Gets?
Now, who in the world could have sent such a thrilling-looking box?
I wonder.
Oh. Open it. Yeah. Ben, look at these flowers.
Yeah.
All of my favorites. Oh, such beautiful things.
And there's your card.
Yes, Ben. Oh, look here. Look here. They're from Grant, Ben.
From Grant?
Yes. Oh, can you believe it? He ordered them days ago before he was sent out and arranged to have them delivered tonight. He says, here, darling, this is Christmas love from Grant.
Now, you see, he was thinking of you getting them tonight.
Oh, look here. Yeah? Here's a war bond tucked beside them as a gift. Oh, that sweet, wonderful darling.
Why, Ginger, it sure is a war bond.
How could I let a husband like this down, Ben? How could
But
I?
You've never let him down, honey.
But I've got to think tonight of all things that we've got to thank God for. Grant always said to me, don't think of me out there in a submarine alone, Brenda. There are quite a few lads just like me, only knowing a lot more right there with me. And in the Atlantic, remember, there's always the good old British Navy right in there with us.
Now, ain't that just like Grant, always? Of course, honey, one of the finest things in this war now seems to me is having the British as our allies, fighting side by side with us.
Why, Ben, you're saying
honey,
that.
Honey, I'll be honest. Now, I never understood them British because I didn't know much about them until the war started. Now I know that the Englishman who won the Battle of Britain from Mr. Hitler, who held the Germans at bay alone for over a year, are among the greatest fighting men the world has ever known.
Ben, you know who I was just thinking of?
Who?
Of Raymond Rogers. Remember him?
Yes, yeah, sure.
He was the first and best leading man I ever had. He was English, and you loved him.
Well, I'll tell you, Brenda, I take my hat off to the British. They're soldiers, and as great an ally as any country ever had. All we got to be sure of in this country of ours is that we all understand these things about the British, the truth, and not let Hitler plant seeds of dissension and misunderstanding. For he's always up to his game of divide and conquer. And that's what he'd like to do with us in Britain and Russia and China. Yes, sir, he'd like to see the United Nations slip wide apart.
Yes, and that's what he'll never see, Ben.
No.
Never, because we understand his methods only too well. And these flowers from Grant, I wish he knew how happy they've made me.
Brenda, may I come in?
Oh, yes, hello there, Carol. Please do come in.
Hi, Mr. Porter.
Hello.
My, what dream flowers.
Aren't they lovely? Grant ordered them to be sent tonight before he left.
Oh, then you are the lucky one. I feel about as much of a glamorous actress tonight as an old stick.
Oh, poor darling, what do you mean by that?
Have I a fiancé whose family teased him on money bags, or haven't I?
Oh, Carol, what a way to talk about Deke, one of Uncle Sam's most handsome young first lieutenants.
Yes, say, where is Lieutenant Walters now, Carol?
Oh, overseas somewhere, I don't know. I haven't heard a word, not one, from Deke. I haven't gotten a Christmas present. Well, not even flowers.
Well, now, Carol, possibly...
Now, don't defend him, Brenda. He's always lavished me with exciting things, and I'm furious. As far as I'm concerned, you can tie Christmas up in a neat little package and send it back to Santa Claus.
Oh, now, really, Carol, you
must... I mean it, all this Christmas spirit. What does it mean? Where does it get you? It's a lot of sentimental twaddle, and I don't believe in it. Deke could have written it, at least. He could have sent me something.
This is her dressing room.
Thank you.
Who's
Mrs.
there?
Mrs. Cummings, Major Rogers is here to see you.
Huh?
What? Major Rogers?
Rogers?
Brenda.
Oh,
but...
why, Raymond, it's you.
Brenda, it's splendid to see you.
Why, this can't be true.
Well, what do you know?
Hello, Raymond, of all people.
Well, by Jove. Ben Porter and Carol Hart.
Oh, Raymond, you just don't know how grand it is to see you. Ben and I were just speaking of you. We thought that you were, well, halfway round the world with the RAS.
And I have been. I was. I'll only be in New York a short time, but I had to stop by and see you, Brenda. It wouldn't seem like New York if I hadn't.
Oh, you're just as devastating as ever, Raymond.
Oh, Carol.
A uniform does something to a man.
Well, how's your life, Carol? Are you married?
No, I'm engaged, but my affection is at a low ebb at the moment. Christmas is getting me down.
You see, she hasn't heard from her lieutenant yet. and she's in very low spirits tonight, Raymond, and I was just about to tell her when you walked in that this Christmas Eve, above all others, is no time to be downhearted.
Right you are, Brenda.
Oh, how wonderful this is. You and Ben and Carol and I, in a dressing room, talking before a performance. And Raymond, for the sake of old times, you and Carol must come home with Ben and me tonight, will you? And make it a real Christmas Eve.
Oh, I'd love to, Brenda. It'll be a lifesaver for me.
Good.
I'd like to enormously, Brenda, but the thing is...
What's that, Raymond?
I have a friend with me, a Russian officer.
Oh, but we'd love to have him, too. Of course, he must come.
Well, then, thank you very much. I know Major Chubukov will enjoy a Christmas Eve in your home as much as I shall.
Fine. Then it's settled. And we'll all meet after the performance and go home. Why, it'll be a sort of symbol for us all to be together on Christmas Eve. Britain, America, Russia, all together in a little white house in Connecticut, welcoming in Christmas, the day of peace on earth, goodwill toward men.
First act, please.
Yes, yes, all right. I'm being called for the first act.
First act, Mrs. Cummings, and places at once a little later.
Yes, I'm ready. I'm coming. Oh, there's so much I want to talk to you about, Raymond.
Well, we'll have time later. Good luck for tonight, Brenda.
Thank you, Raymond. And, oh, Raymond, dear, I must hear all about your family, your wife, Eileen, and your darling little son, Robin. But I haven't got any more time to talk now. Goodbye for now, Robin.
What is it, Raymond? What's the matter, sir? What's the matter?
My wife. My baby.
Oh, what's wrong, son? What?
I simply can't tell you, Ben. I simply can't.
A silence in the room. A silence heavy with unspoken words. Ben has turned away from the dark pain in Raymond's eyes. But Ben feels that somehow his question has been answered. Listen tomorrow. You won't want to miss the emotional scene in the little white house in Connecticut in the next chapter of Second Husband. Now, once again, speaking for the United States government, here is Carl Van Doren.
The United Nations are in existence for a great deal more than the waging of the war. Their peoples must also work together in the peace ahead so as to build a better world based upon mutual consideration, understanding, and the essential freedoms. The United Nations came to being January 1st, 1942, when 28 countries signed the now famous Declaration by United Nations. In that declaration, the United Nations subscribed to the common program of purposes and principles embodied in the Atlantic Charter. The Atlantic Charter is worldwide in scope. It applies to India and China and Russia and Burma and Africa and Europe and all the Americas. The free world the United Nations are fighting for includes the four freedoms for everyone, regardless of race, color, or creed. The war has taught us that an attack on liberty anywhere in the world is an attack on liberty everywhere in the world. The war has taught us that what happens to a people anywhere in the world affects people everywhere in the world. That's why we must remain united. We must be united to win both the war and our peace. We must be united to build the new free world of the four freedoms, where there can be freedom from want and fear, freedom of religion and speech for everyone, everywhere. Alone, no nation can guarantee the benefits of the principles outlined in the Atlantic Charter. Together, the United Nations can guarantee the fruits of victory to all countries and to all peoples. You have heard the first episode of Second Husband, brought to you on the Victory Front, a new series of special programs in which the people you love in popular daytime programs are visiting you on behalf of your government. The United States government wishes to thank all who are donating their talents to score one more blow for victory, including members of the American Federation of Radio Artists. Listen tomorrow at this time for episode number 2 of Second Husband in this story about the United Nations on the Victory Front. Thank you.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.